Today we're speaking with Sean Brandt from the Mohawk Nation, so thanks for speaking to us.
Thanks for having me.
And I just want to ask you a bit about the situation in Tiendanaga. But before we get into that, I was just wondering, sort of, because over the past few years there's been many struggles across quote-unquote Canada over Aboriginal land rights in Oka, Charpent Lake, and Tiendanaga, to name a few places. So can you tell us a little bit more about sort of the larger, a little bit more historical context in which these struggles occur?
Sure. Well, essentially, what people are seeing is an awakening of First Nations community to the dismal circumstances that people find themselves in. Day-to-day struggles occur to get water in a community where the water is polluted, and we have 100 First Nations communities like ours here that's unable to drink their water. So there's those types of things. There's people are confined into extremely small land bases, and we have an ever-growing population. And statistically across Canada, half of all First Nations people are under the age of 25. So we've had this incredible birth rate compared to the population, but our land base has in fact either remained the same or gotten smaller. And what you see in these struggles is communities that are attempting to reach out and to take control and direction over their lives and to help facilitate a future for the children, whether that's through the struggle for land or whether that's through the struggle for clean water or other social issues. But the acts of land reclamation are starting to come from people that are living in desperate circumstances and having to undertake these actions because governments are unwilling to honor agreements that have been previously made or even entertain simple discussions or negotiations at a table. And so when a community like Ardoc, Six Nations, or Tiendanaga stands up, I think it's really important that people understand where that's coming from and the frustration where it's coming from and that need that we have as First Nations people, as anybody has, to provide a safe and happy and healthy community in which we can raise our children.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And since 2006, there's been sort of various land occupations and blockades in Tiendanaga. So can you tell us a bit about what's going on there?
Well, in Tiendanaga, certainly the land is ever present in people's minds, but for the last 6 years, we've been unable to drink the water within our community. We line up at a spigot in the park with our water buckets in order to bring that home. We reel from certainly still to this day with the residential school experience. We live with that trauma in our community and within our lives, and so Tiendanaga is really a community that sort of goes beyond those types of things and seeks justice for communities that don't have a voice as well as our own, but other communities that don't have a voice in some of the social circumstances that we're burdened with. And you know, recently I know there's been a lot of talk of the murdered and missing women across this country, and I think that looking at a situation where up to 3,000 women have been just picked up, abducted, raped, murdered, buried in mass graves, found in crib beds, put in wood chippers, that no level of government or police body is willing to even undertake and investigate our women and our mothers and our daughters that are going missing every day. And so we confront society in a larger way, and we challenge them. Tiendanaga specifically has undertaken numerous campaigns of what we call economic disruption, whereby the railways have been closed, highways have been closed, our entire community participates in these, and it's a way for us, if not just to bring attention, but to satisfy ourselves that we living in this society with all these things that are going on around us are willing to stand up and confront the indignity that's truly a stain on Canada's history and its present and facilitate some semblance of justice for those types of things. And that's really what Tyendinaga is about and how it functions as a community.
Well, that sounds quite strong and powerful. And so how does that organizing work sort of across the community in Chandanaga and even sort of reaching out to other communities? Because from what I've heard in the past, there's been quite a bit of solidarity amongst different Native communities and from some non-Native people in Canada as well.
Absolutely. And in Tyendinaga here, I'm a citizen of the Mohawk Nation, and across Canada, there's a number of different nations that the First Nations people belong to. So we're not necessarily united in our citizenship, but we are united because we equally face the challenges, and the struggles, I guess, in our day-to-day lives. And so what we find is that when Tyendinaga is faced with a problem or Tyendinaga is standing on the lines, then other communities from one coast to the other coast recognize that and join us in that wherever they are in standing in solidarity. And right now in the province of Ontario, the government of Canada and the province of Ontario have undertaken a final step towards assimilation of all First Nations people in the imposition of a collective tax against our communities. And so within the province of Ontario today, there is 133 communities that are prepared to stand up in opposition to the government's imposition of this tax upon our people. And really we're being faced with now overwhelming poverty in our communities that's just indescribable to people and very difficult for people to comprehend, but overwhelming poverty. And the government now has undertaken legislation to add a 13% burden onto our people. And so that the real press for solidarity in the past, that real push for people to stand collectively together, that's going to be demonstrated in the next few days and a few weeks. And people will see that firsthand. We're not going to sit idly by and allow for these things to continue. And we're certainly not going to stand up and sound like a bunch of whiners. If there's a need for us as the first people on our own land to be able to step forward and undertake our own future by our own action, then that's what's going to happen. And government has not responded, society hasn't responded to the tears of our mothers and the tears of our daughters. They haven't acknowledged or responded in any way compassionately to the poverty and the destitution of our people. And so when those things fail, and when society fails, when people are so marginalized that they literally die on a daily basis, then it's incumbent upon us as a society to stand up and to rise up and to take those things that are truly and justly ours. And that comes with solidarity. It comes with standing together. It comes with support from our non-Native sisters and brothers and our trade unions. And those people that truly understand that the plight of First Nations people and the need to rise up and do something about it immediately.
Definitely. And how did you? Because I think we've heard a lot of coverage about the Olympics in Vancouver and Coast Salish territories, a lot of the sort of the main resistance theme, I guess, to the Olympics was no Olympics on stolen Native land. How did you feel about that? Because that sort of got a lot of attention.
It sure did, and properly so. And I know that there was a lot of, I know that the intent in coming out in opposition to the Olympics was to draw international attention towards those issues that we've already been discussing. And And I guess I entirely support the efforts of First Nations people in bringing those issues forward. But at some point, my conflict with it is that at some point we have to stop relying on our circumstances to bring attention. People are well aware of what's happening to First Nations people in this country. People are well aware that Canada will be the last country in the world that refuses to sign on or even consider the United Nations Declaration on Indigenous People. We're well aware, and the world is well aware, and they've been condemned by the United Nations. For us to simply stand up again and say, we're going to use this opportunity to draw attention at what point, that's the dilemma. At what point do you stop drawing attention and start doing something about it? And it's not enough for me to know that I stood up against the Olympic torch and someone in another country saw that. It's just not enough. It still means that when I've confronted that, I still have to come back to my home and realize that I'm living the status quo again. And I think that's going to be the basis of the frustration that people will see soon.
Definitely, definitely. Okay, so I also wanted to ask you because there's also Canadian Rail has recently launched a lawsuit, I guess last year, against three people, yourself, Sean Brandt, Jason Miracle, and Tara Green, as well as your families and communities, in response to a blockade of the railway in April, a railway that goes through Chandanaga, in April 2007. Is there any sort of update on what's going on with that?
That's something that's been ongoing. CN has, launched that suit. I think their real intention was to scare people from utilizing the railway as a means to express dissent, and so it's something that's ongoing in the courts. And I think that there's a real fear. And when CN filed that suit, I think it genuinely understood and was afraid for the first time, because they now had that feeling in their gut that running this railway beside this Mohawk community that talks about economic disruption, that talks about the flow of goods and trade, there's 430 First Nations communities across this country that have either a CN railway or a CP railway that runs through or close to its community. And when we shut that down, three times we shut it down, we spoke to that, and we spoke to the real need of there being consequences for the circumstances of our lives and how we got there. Not by our own hand, but through government legislation and their refusal to accommodate what was happening in any meaningful way or through the course that society expects, sitting at a table and having those discussions and saying, why are your children killing themselves? Why are your people dying? Why isn't there clean water? But government has ignored that. And so when we targeted CN, we came out and said, we know there's $650 million worth of trade that goes through our community every single day, 23 passenger trains, and that's going to come to a stop. We're not going to be the only ones that are bearing this burden upon our shoulders for our circumstances, that if we're suffering, everyone's going to suffer. And that's the message that CN was afraid of when they launched the lawsuit, because they certainly don't want this to be a widespread feeling towards them. And filing a billion-dollar lawsuit against me and a couple other Indians living on an Indian reserve is not really the way to resolve our problems. Speaking to government, CN could speak to government and encourage them for their own economic well-being to come at least to the point of offering the respect to our leadership to sit down and discuss these very pressing issues. And that's where they failed. And our community rejects that claim outright. And it certainly won't be an impediment to us when we make decisions about how we're going to stand in the future.
Nice. And just before we wrap up, I was wondering if there's anything else you wanted to add or anywhere that our listeners can go to get a bit more information to keep updated and things.
Well, we certainly have friends. No one is illegal. Carries a lot of the information on what's going on in Indian country, and as well the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty are very much our strong allies and supporters, and they maintain sites with links to First Nations issues and not just issues on whining about things and talking about things, but they really help us get out that message that there's people that are standing up, fighting back and struggling to change things. We're the last people on this continent in North America to be free. And we've been confined to these postage stamp lands, denied very basic rights, and live in circumstances that nobody should live in. And people should be well aware that, that we're going to find our place and fulfill our destiny. We're going to stand up. We're going to be free people. We're going to walk free, talk free, live free, have access to our own resources, and shape our own economies. And that's where we're going. And our friends and allies support us in that. And without that, then it would make the struggle a lot harder. But there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and I'm optimistic about it.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's good news. So thanks a lot for taking the time to speak to us today. It's been really good to hear from you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.